Welcome to the Three Martini Lunch. Grab a stool next to Greg Corumbus of Radio America and Jim Garrity of National Review. Three Martinis coming up.
Hey, really glad you're with us for the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim Garrity is off today. We are joined by Emily Jashinsky, culture editor of The Federalist, host of the Federalist Radio Hour, director of the National Journalism Center, senior fellow at the Independent Women's Forum, co-host of Counterpoints, and somehow she still has enough time to fill in for Jim today at the Three Martini Lunch. Emily, how are you? It's good to talk to you again.
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Greg.
Oh, it's great to have you. We got crazy, bad, and crazy today, and we were just debating whether it should all be crazy, but I think the middle one has to stay bad. But let's start with the first crazy, because anybody who was on Twitter last night knows exactly what we're talking about. Some blue checks from the left got suspended last night, and that's something they're not used to, Emily. So we had a problem over there. People like Aaron Rupar, you've got CNN's Donia Sullivan, you've got Washington Post Drew Harwell, and some other people who were getting suspended. And so the apoplexy kicked in pretty quickly. What in the world happened? And Elon Musk later came on to explain, I just told you yesterday I'm changing the rules on doxing. You're not allowed to give out specific real-time information about where other people are. This was all because of the fact that some people harassed a vehicle they thought he was in, but his young son was in. And then last night, it appears there were people tracking where he might have been in real time with his airplane. And so the left, of course, Emily, which had no problem with the New York Post getting suspended over the Hunter Biden laptop issue, or people getting in trouble for even linking to that, or many other things, COVID, elections, whatever, over the years. Very, very upset with this. Over at CNN, Oliver Darcy, longtime the sidekick of Brian Stelter over there, talking about what a dark, dark day this is.
I think this raises a big question about what the free press, what the future of the free press on Twitter looks like. You know, are news organizations going to stand by as the reporters are just, you know, hastily banned without explanation? CNN is saying it's going to reevaluate its relationship with Twitter based on the response it gets. I want to read you the full statement, Allison. Please. It says, the impulsive and unjustified suspension of a number of reporters, including CNN's Donia Sullivan, is concerning but not surprising. And it goes on to say Twitter's increasing instability and volatility should be of incredible concern for everyone who uses Twitter. And then it goes on to say, we've asked Twitter for an explanation and we will reevaluate our relationship based on that response. And I think it's so important to point out that Twitter really needs or really relies on news. I mean, that's the lifeblood of
and
Twitter.
Journalists.
Current events.
I mean, they're all on Twitter.
So when conservatives get suspended, Emily, it's misinformation, disinformation, saving democracy, et cetera, et cetera. If it's a lefty, the free press itself is on the line. So while there might be a better way to go about the policy, what do you make about the double standard here?
Yes, I have all of these journalists in my prayers today because, you know, it's a hard time for them. I have so little sympathy for these folks because my colleague John Daniel Davidson has been suspended for forever because he said at one point Rachel Levine is a man, and there were no tears. There was no outrage, nothing, even though that's a pretty clear cut statement of fact. And there are many other people that have been in similar situations to John. And actually, a lot of these journalists who are now hysterical about Elon Musk were calling for more bans. They were the ones that were chasing the bans. They wanted the content to be moderated that way. So Elon Musk is acting like a capricious billionaire. Of course, we have lower standards for capricious billionaires. I get that Elon Musk said he's wants to bring a free speech neutral mentality back to the platform. I do think that it's wrong to suspend these accounts because while he's correct that the FAA data is not public, you sort of need to know which jet is his and connect those dots and in order to do that. I get it. But I think, you know, billionaire private jet tracking is entirely fair ground for journalism. I understand why it makes him uncomfortable. And I understand in this environment why people are feel insecure about their personal safety. 100%. Thankfully, he can afford security. But come on, this is what you expect of a capricious billionaire. This is not what we expect, however, of the Fourth Estate. They should have always been concerned about this instead of being entirely in the opposite opposite camp and actually wanting more suppression and censorship. It's just, while Elon Musk may be wrong in this case, even though this is hardly as clear cut as the question of Rachel Levine's biological sex, I just have zero sympathy. And I think it is a much, much less important issue than the issue of basically the entire journalism industry tossing the principles of free speech out the window years ago and now wanting support. It's just absurd.
Yeah, there's so many different potential follow-ups here. First of all, on the capricious billionaire front, nobody ever says that about Jeff Bezos. And just a week or two ago, there was a piece in the Washington Post about how Diet Coke might be the official drink of basically psychopathic autocrats because Trump drinks it, and apparently so does Elon Musk. So, democracy, of course, dying in darkness as well. But nobody ever seems to have the full-page expose on Jeff Bezos because, you know, he has all the right opinions.
Right, right, exactly. And it shows, like, their true principles really show in times like this. When they were in a Spaces yesterday, a Twitter Spaces conversation, and Elon Musk popped in, and the journalist just had this tone as though it was D-Day. I mean, it was unbelievable. Like, they were at war, they were being oppressed and targeted. And it just, it's very clear when something like this happens, that they have a one-sided approach to what free speech looks like. They actually do not believe in free speech anymore. And again, it's fine when powerful people don't. Even if powerful people say they do, we know people in power are going to be hypocrites. That's exactly why the First Amendment is the First Amendment. It's why the Fourth Estate, as we call it, is essential to a functioning democracy, a functioning system of Republican government. You have to have a free press that wants everybody to be reporting on powerful folks without fear or favor. And they don't want anybody. I mean, it's fine to do that with a viewpoint. It's not fine to do that and claim you have no viewpoint when you clearly do. But they should want powerful people, whether they're Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, George Soros, whoever it is. They should want those people to get extremely critical treatment in the press. But they just want it for one type of person. It's just a very sad statement, I think, on how far the press has come from playing its role. And, if Elon Musk wants to let conservatives say some things with honesty, that not even just conservatives, liberals, too, who agree on different issues, if he wants to allow that to happen on Twitter, if it's not going to be welcome in the New York Times or the Washington Post, fine. I mean, blunt force object. I'm not going to be crying too much for Aaron Rupar's Twitter account.
Nobody's going to miss Keith Olbermann for a little while either. So, Emily, you are a journalist. You teach journalists. And so, one of the things I think that's happened over the past decade or 15 years, however long Twitter's been around, is how people who still present themselves as objective presenters of facts have basically exposed themselves as rank partisans. Now, some people are columnists. Some people work for, opinion type sites, present company included. But for those who present themselves as the arbiters of truth and then reveal their true colors over and over and over again, what has Twitter actually done to the journalism profession just by giving them a platform to be the partisans they actually are?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question, because I was talking to David Harsanyi, my colleague, yesterday on Federalist Radio Hour, and he was saying, it's easy to lose sight of how great Twitter was, especially at first, for democratizing the industry, for allowing people to point out the hypocrisies, for goading liberal journalists into showing their true colors, and then allowing other folks, conservatives or people like Matt Taibbi, to report on the revelation that all of these folks who purport to be neutral are actually like far left, not even just sort of center left, but far left in so many cases. And they call themselves reporters, or they call themselves anchors. And, it's been a tool. And so I don't want to lose sight of that, because it is true that it just flung open the curtain in a way that nothing ever had or could. So I get that point. I think it has been good overall in that respect. But I also think it's a net negative to journalism, period. So while it exposed the biases, it also created this incredible echo chamber among the most powerful journalists. So, independent journalists can poke around the edges and do what they do, and that's great. You know, the Federalist has a big Twitter presence, and our journalists have a big Twitter presence. But we don't control the New York Times. We don't control the airwaves. We don't, those are still powerful places, and their power is waning. But as the most powerful people are able to just let their opinions coalesce, and those opinions, you know, are ones that push other people out the door if they don't share the same take. I think that has just become incredibly, incredibly dangerous because it alienates people, it pushes them out of what they feel is polite society, and it makes people really angry. And all of that division and anger, I think, has been toxic to our society, our ability to function.
Real quick exit question. Did Elon Musk do himself any damage in how he's handled this? In terms of his free speech for everyone mantra that he's had, of course, over these past several months.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think everybody—it's just not as clear-cut as a case with like the Rachel Levine thing. I think some people do understand that he's trying to protect his family and he's targeted. And all of the people who are angry at him were already angry at him. They're just sort of using this as an excuse to be like, see, we told you he's bad. And it's like, well, yeah, everyone kind of knew that he was going to make this his platform. So I don't know, but I do personally agree that I think it is hypocritical. I think it is a bad standard to set if you want a neutral platform to say that this is across the sort of boundaries of reasonable journalism. But I just don't think it's that grave of an offense. So I don't know. I think the people who are already mad are just using this as an excuse to be madder.
Yeah, I also think they see him as the next Trump. Not that he's going to run for anything, but no matter what he does, the reaction is at 11 instead of, you know, whatever it is he actually said. So whether it's this instance or something else, he's getting that type of treatment. So I'm telling you, you can't get a better Christmas holiday gift than the Omaha Steaks package. Just had them last night, in fact. Mrs. Karumbas did a phenomenal job of cooking the Omaha Steaks. We had a full meal out of it. It was absolutely delicious. And I'm telling you, whether it's for yourself or a loved one, a friend, get it. And now 50% off site-wide, plus our code MARTINI at checkout, and you'll get an additional 40% off. But look, it's December 16th. You've got 8 or 9 days, depending on when you want this thing to arrive in time for Christmas. So order now so you can beat the shipping rush. Everything's backed by Omaha's unconditional 100% money-back guarantee. Omaha Steaks is a gift from the heart, a gift that will be remembered with every unforgettable bite. Order with complete confidence today, knowing you're ordering the very best. Visit omahasteaks.com to save 50% off site-wide and use the promo code MARTINI at checkout to get that extra $40 off your order. Minimum order may be required. omahasteaks.com, promo code MARTINI at checkout. omahasteaks.com, code MARTINI. All right, Emily, I put the date in there because, and I should now put the year in here, it's December 16th, 2022, because this policy from the Philadelphia Public Schools is going to make some people bang their head against the wall. This is from the Free Beacon. Philadelphia Public Schools will require students to wear masks for 10 days after the holiday break, marking the latest Democratic-run city to push for lockdown-era mandates. Quote, this is a proactive measure to reduce the spread of COVID-19, said school district spokeswoman Christina Clark, adding that schools will, quote, implement any actions to protect the health and well-being of students. She says forcing the masking of children is supporting healthy environments. They've learned absolutely nothing so far, Emily. And an accompanying Free Beacon story tells the story out in California. California students lost 6 years of math and reading gains thanks to the state's pandemic school closures. Learning loss was concentrated among poor, Black, and Latino students, according to an analysis from the nonpartisan Public Policy Institute of California released this week. Only 24% of poor students and 15% of Black students met math proficiency, down from 32% and 21%, respectively. The concentration of learning loss could cause problems for California Democrats who have prided themselves on advancing racial equity. I'm sure they'll have an explanation for why that's not the case. But Emily, we know the results. We know what kids suffer, whether they get COVID or not. It's pretty mild for them. And yet we keep going down this road. Why?
You're right. And I think it's just a good indication of how hardened the left is right now to alternative perspectives and to new evidence and new information, because there's obvious, especially when they're invoking the health and safety of students. I mean, we have seen very clear evidence, and this is on a bipartisan basis. You have people expressing concern about this evidence that suggests the health and safety of students is best served by having open schools and by not isolating kids away from school and wearing masks, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there is just very clear evidence at this point that if you take your partisan blinders off, that's the best way to serve their health and safety, is to not bring back any of these mandates and to not close anything down and to not have masks in the classroom, because it hampers learning. And what's sad is I don't think we even fully understand the extent of those damages yet. And before we can even understand the extent of those damages, we're bringing this stuff back. I mean, it just shows an inability to process disputing information, because you've sort of dismissed everybody who might believe in that information as a conspiracy theorist, or worse, you know. And when you start lumping people into those categories, first of all, you're going to make them want to lump you into categories, so that's not good. But you're also just closing yourself off from competing information and logic in a way that allows really bad ideas to metastasize without any, you know, sunlight as the best disinfectant. And it's just so sad to see it happening in a way that affects kids' health.
No, it absolutely is. The fact that Randy Weingarten is not a pariah in our society right now, head of the American Federation of Teachers, and what some of the unions have done to push as long and hard as possible for kids to stay out of school is absolutely ridiculous. And the spin job they're doing from the Biden administration on down. Well, if the Republicans hadn't opposed spending a kajillion dollars on brand new HVACs for every building, we would have been in school sooner. So it's really the Republicans' fault that kids weren't back in school sooner. We're going to have people admitting that they were wrong without actually admitting they were wrong. The spin from Democrats that everything we told you in the last 2 years, we didn't actually tell you. It's kind of maddening.
Yeah, I can't imagine as a parent how maddening it is, especially for a kid who went through all of this. I mean, it just, the students that I work with, a lot of times that went through the pandemic, they know what they missed out on. They know how bad it is because they're typically older students. But especially for the younger kids, I can't imagine being a parent who had the whiplash through all of this and is still observing it to this day.
Unbelievable. We'll be right back with a quick look at our second crazy martini. All right, back for our final martini, another crazy one. We need another crazy one, I guess, to close out the week. And for that, we turn to Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. We know that he was on paternal leave when the major shipping backlog was going on, the supply chain problems, especially along the West Coast. And now we're finding out that Pete Buttigieg was vacationing in Europe leading up to what could have been a devastating rail strike in this country. Free Beacon also with this story. As rail contract negotiations entered a period of crisis in September, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg phoned in from over 3,500 miles away during a vacation in Porto, Portugal, a posh tourist destination best known for its wine production. Buttigieg quietly jetted off to Portugal on August 29th, a week before Amtrak began canceling all long-distance trips in preparation of potentially a catastrophic rail strike. The Liberty weekend travel is described as a long-planned personal trip, and that Buttigieg remained available and engaged from Europe. So, first of all, Emily, you're probably going to get some people saying, well, this was a labor issue more than a transportation issue. So Marty Walsh, the labor secretary, and other folks were probably more on point at that point. Others, of course, will say, well, you can do your job from wherever in the world now. We've got that ability. But if a Republican Secretary of Transportation had been vacationing on the coast of Portugal a week before a potentially economic crippling railroad strike, I'm guessing we would have heard about it before December.
We would have, and that's because I think everybody knows those excuses are really not sound in this particular case because, yes, the negotiations were a labor issue, but if those negotiations had failed in an immediate and urgent way, as they could have, and that's not necessarily thanks to the Biden administration either, but if they had failed, there would have been an enormous crisis. And I think the story is totally worth talking about precisely because, as you mentioned earlier, he was on parental leave as the shipping crisis was unfolding, and he was on Parental Leave for a long time as the shipping crisis unfolded last year. And so when it becomes a pattern, if you were a Republican, you would start to have a narrative shape around you that this is a person who's more interested in sort of the personal endeavors and boosting their own career than the job itself. And again, it's a pattern because Pete Buttigieg has handled air negotiations, plane negotiations poorly also. We've had crises with our transportation in this system, some of which are not his fault, are stemming from the pandemic and from gas issues and a bad economy. But nevertheless, it is his job, and he doesn't seem to be doing it very well, and he doesn't seem to be doing it at all in this case. It's true that you can phone in, you can zoom in if you're in Portugal, but it's not appropriate when you're a public official, you're funded by taxpayers, to be out of the country with an imminent crisis looming. He should have been making contingency plans for what would happen. He should have been in D.C., meeting face-to-face with people, giving the job of the respect that it deserves, and making contingency plans in case those negotiations failed. And that's no small task. That would require a lot of work. And we really were very close to something bad. And why wasn't he talking to people in Congress, sharing the Biden administration's perspective on how dangerous it would be if this stuff failed, or the alternative, what workers actually need, what they can do. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And the reason that we're in this situation is particularly because of a transportation issue, is because of the Railway Act from the 1920s. So there's very much a transportation angle to all of it, that he should have been in country, in face to face, on top of.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, they might not want to, but when they go on vacation, they check their email. If they know a significant thing is happening with their work, they might take a little bit of time off for a conference call or so forth. At the very least, you say, yeah, text me if you need anything. I don't want to talk to you this week, but I'm around if you need me. That seems to be where Pete Buttigieg was here. But maybe it just comes down to the fact that Pete Buttigieg has nothing to add in these situations, because his qualification for being transportation secretary was putting in a bunch of bike paths in South Bend, Indiana, which might not have been the best preparation for this job. Jim and I have talked about this a lot. This is a Biden cabinet that was put together to check a lot of boxes rather than be the best person for the job. I don't know how you see it, but that seems to be bearing itself out here in a number of different stories.
Absolutely. I think that's absolutely the case. And again, I just can't imagine being able to go on a vacation, just even on a personal level, being able to go on a vacation knowing that a crisis could be looming. And in fact, that it is unfolding. Being out of the country, I just can't imagine even being comfortable with that. I think it speaks a lot to Pete Buttigieg's sort of mentality. Listen, if you have to reschedule your vacation, you're the transportation secretary. You just have to deal with it. You decided to take this job as a public servant. Reschedule your vacation. It's just unbelievable.
Apparently, there's nice beaches in Delaware because the president's there every week. You could be a lot closer there. And then you're right at the Amtrak hub. Right at Joe Biden Station or whatever is right there in Wilmington, right?
Yeah, it is. It's Joe Biden Station. I one time I looked up and I saw the sign for Joe Biden Station in Wilmington, and I was like, really? Wow. I guess it makes sense.
Well, Emily, this administration gives us no shortage of crazy martinis, that's for sure. Thank you so much for filling in for Jim. Merry Christmas to you, and we'll hopefully talk to you again soon.
Merry Christmas, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Emily Jashinsky. She is the culture editor at The Federalist. She's the host of the Federalist Radio Hour. And she's also director of the National Journalism Center, senior fellow at the Independent Women's Forum, and co-host of Counterpoints. Jim Garrity will be back on Monday. Please subscribe to the Three Martini Lunch podcast. If you don't already, tell a friend about us as well. Thank you also for your 5-star ratings and your kind reviews. Please keep those coming. Get us on your home devices. All you have to say is play Three Martini Lunch podcast. Follow all of us on Twitter. Emily is at Emily Jashinsky. Jim is at Jim Garrity. I'm at Dateline_DC. Don't forget about Jim's brand new book, Gathering Five Storms, and the accompanying short story, Saving the Devil. Have a fabulous weekend, and join us again on Monday for the next Three Martini Lunch.